The Jeff Calkins Show.
We're joined now by Jason Smith. Jason Smith, of course, of the Jason and John Show. Good morning, Jason.
How are you, man?
If you, with your indulgence, I want to read something. This was posted on Facebook. Sean Ilsley, I'm going to say his name is, and it's a little bit long, but it involves you, and I thought I would start this way, if it's okay. Whenever my father was disappointed with me, he'd start the conversation with, boy, boy, boy. Boy, 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 am I disappointed with myself, he writes. However, I am so grateful for God opening my heart and providing me the instruments to help me finally listen. The story goes way back, but it starts in the middle. Ahmed Aubrey, a black man, gunned down by a white man. Christian Cooper, a black man, looking at birds in Central Park, threatened because he asked a white woman to leash her dog. George Floyd, a black man. A white police officer in 9 minutes decided his fate for an alleged forgery. I normally would have seen these stories in the news. It would sadden me. I usually wouldn't get moved further. But today I was inspired. Today I believe God opened my heart to listen and actually hear. I acknowledge the team at 92.9 FM. I caught the tail end of the Jeff Calkins Show. And Sean, I'm grateful for that. Thank you very much. Tail end's a little bit, maybe the front end next time and the tail end, but still grateful. He continues, I'm so grateful to have listened to all 3 hours of Jason Smith and the John Martin Show. Heard the beginning and end of the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show. Unfortunately, I only heard the last 10, 30 minutes of Gary's show, but the blessing was the opening segment from Jason Smith. I started to listen. Black Lives Matter? I used to say all lives matter. I was comfortable with that stance. That's just not the case. White privilege? What? I'm not rich. I'm not on easy street. I've argued that I've never had it. I've been arrested several times, all justified. Today, I can't imagine what a black man would have gone through in my place. Always the kicker was Kaepernick kneeling. Damn it, my daddy, William Ilsley, who I love dearly, fought for this flag, for freedom. And Kaepernick was disrespecting my country, my family, my daddy. Today, and just starting today, I realized that what Kaepernick was doing was for the exact reason my dad and my family that fought for the freedom of our country was doing. Yet the only ones free in this country are white people. Great. I now have a new understanding. Now I want to know how to make it better. I alone can't, but I can continue to listen. Big voices need to continue to speak out. Big white voices need to speak honestly and loud for all. Maybe some, hopefully most, will listen. So, Jason, people ask, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? It appears that through your really emotional and eloquent discussion yesterday of this entire situation, you yourself, Jason Smith, opened a heart, changed a mind. You got to feel a little proud of that, or gratified, or grateful, or something. What do you feel?
You're moved. It's absolutely. I won't lie to you. I'll tell you. I saw that message this morning. It was the first thing I saw when I woke up. You know, you get on your phone. You check your. You're going through your phone. Anybody call? You've been sending texts. Then it's, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all that. And so he tagged us. So it was easily viewable very early on in the opening of my eyes. And I'll be real honest with you, Jeff. I closed my eyes and I said thank you, because that yesterday, you know. We're opening a three-hour sports show, and I'd be remiss if I didn't give you a bunch of credit for setting the tone. And I think that writer tells you, Ilsley tells you right there, because you said it early in your show. You did it when you were opening up calls. Let's listen to each other. And it's really John asked me to open our when we opened our show. What do I do? What do we do? And no, you can't solve what ails this country with a three-hour radio show, and, you know, in a day or not, you know, a day or two or whatever, we're not gonna do it for a while. But what you can do is be open and honest, and if people are willing to listen, say how you really feel. And I appreciate that, you know, my co-host thought it was important enough to let me get it off my chest. Jeff, hey, here's the beauty of it. I had the names of George Floyd. I had some points I wanted to make, but I had no idea where it was going to go. And so to sum this all up, yeah, man, because that was the hope, was that if we're going to get to any sort of change, black folks can't change what's going on in this country by themselves. We need your help. And what we need you to do now, as John Martin asked me, what do I do? Just listen to us. Feel our pain so that the police officers that killed George Floyd, so Amy Cooper in Central Park, so the McMillans in Georgia, those folks know that they can't get away with this, because that is why this continues, is because so many of us are not willing to stop and listen. It's just a statistic. Oh, it didn't happen in my world, so it doesn't really concern me. That's their problem. That's how it just keeps going, and it keep, you know, and so to stop and listen yesterday, and clearly Sean did, and I'm so appreciative that, you know, he came back and said that, because hopefully it's more than one heart. And that's, you know, I told a story to and this goes right with it, and I hope it's okay, and the people that have heard the story, I'll keep it short. But I told a story on Jeffrey and Giannotto yesterday that, you know, how my mom was disowned by her father, my white grandfather, and I never had a relationship with him because he told her, you marry that black man, you're out of my life, and no support for me. Now his wife, you know, over the years, she knew that was wrong. So I had somewhat of a, you know, eventually I'm meeting her, but there's no real connection with that side, and I never met my grandfather. He missed out on everything that I am, that my son is, all of that. But here's the point. His daughter, who was raised by him, right, even his wife, his other daughters, at some point, even despite being raised like that, realized, you know what, I'm looking at this wrong. He's wrong, and I'm gonna do what I believe is right. Now, in this case, love is involved, and love will make us do crazy things, Jeff. You know that. But my point is that even in families where this stuff is handed down, right, whatever it is, it's partly what John Martin wrote about yesterday, fear. Part of it, you just don't want to hear it. Part of it's real hard racism. But you can change, folks, even in the same family, is the point. Sean, there clearly, the key words to me were beforehand, he just saw, because, again, his world, what his dad told him, and with all due respect, clearly, I mean, I understand it, that kneeling for the flag, right, was in some way, you know, an infringement upon everything we value about that flag, upon his, you know, upon his family's rights, more importantly, what his dad fought for. And we've been screaming for a while, and Kaepernick has told you, I mean, I think it was even a serviceman that told him this is what you should do, that's not what it's about, that we promise that's not what it's about. So to get back to the point, Sean listened to me yesterday, and usually, you've seen it, we start talking flag. No, that's my flag. Can they find another way? And back to the point. Well, what would you have us do? You definitely don't want us out here riding. You see Minneapolis, it's a mess today. That's not what we want to do. And so yesterday you saw a heart change. And despite me yesterday, there's one comment that said, well, you can't end the racism. You know, this is silly. No, man, I think one heart at a time we can change, folks. I've seen it. And, you know, with my own family, Sean, I thought it was a wonderful testimony. I appreciate it so much because, you know, it shows you that people can change despite what they've been, what's been learned, what's been taught, what's been handed down. And again, I was moved, man, to see it because, man, Jeff, we're not going to change anything in a day or two. This, you know, one protest isn't going to change anything. But if we do change the minds and hearts of people who maybe, you know, thought, that's not my problem. Or, you know what, they're fighting the wrong battle. If you just listen and feel our pain, man, I think we can all sort of get, I think we'll convince you that what we've seen here these last, you know, this past week has been unbelievably wrong, and we've got to put a stop to it. We need y'all to help us put a stop to it.
I do think the whole thing did underscore, in that one tweet, Lance Thomas, which he then took down.
Right.
I don't know if we would have felt like we had permission to talk about this on a sports show. We probably would have, but the fact that he had tweeted what he did enables us to talk about it, creates conversation about it. It shows the value of it. It shows, I think, opened the door. And then I have to give enormous credit to Laird Veach, who really is the one who came on my show yesterday and said that his instant reaction was to listen to Lance. I mean, he's the one who said that, and I thought that was exactly right. I guess the whole thing, and the reason that I liked the post by Sean so well, It wasn't because he was slobbering over 92.9, although that's always nice. It was, and I did think it was because sometimes people look for where is hope in this stuff. And I guess in the end, I really do think people can change and broadly society can change. I mean, I look at myself. I mean, just think about the I grew up in America where saying the N-word was commonplace. Calling someone, you know, using the commonplace gay slur, absolutely commonplace. I mean, that was like just what you would call someone who, you know, who you didn't like or whatever. Like, I remember having debates. Literally, I would have debates about the morality of homosexuality when I was a freshman in college. And I was debating the immoral side. And that was many years ago, and I have changed. So I think people can, I do think, and I then, here's the other thing is that when it's someone who people know and respect as they do you, and I know you didn't mean to break down in your opening segment yesterday, but when it's someone who you know and respect and like, and know it comes from a place of integrity, and they are literally breaking down over it, I don't know how you can't stop and listen to that. Like, I do think, I think Sean was one heart, but I think other hearts were changed too. And I hope it continues that way. I don't know.
I hope so. Go ahead. You know, let's be real too. You wonder when you, how many of those hearts that you're hoping to change, right? How many, can you keep them through, you know, what's going on last night in Minneapolis where it looks like a war zone, it gets into a police precinct, folks are, right? Because at that point, right, you lose the message. But again, look at, I mean, at a time, and I'll just be real honest with you, Jeff, when you know, we need to be diffusing situations, I'm not sure we're getting the leadership we need. But to that point, I don't want the conversation now, and I fear it will go to, oh, man, you know, man, look at those folks, you know, looting and rioting and all that. You lose George Floyd. Like, it's you honestly do. But I also understand the rage, Jeff, because they're telling you you can't kneel for the flag, right? They're heck, I mean, last night the state troopers come in, they're arresting folks, and they're calling you thugs. And again, what are you had any counter protesters two nights ago in Memphis? Thank God they weren't there last night. But they're saying, "Hey, go out for a jog," like that is that adds to it. And when you know, the point is that at some points where you've tried to do it peacefully, you've reached that boiling point where I think sometimes, unfortunately, because we're going to need you all, right, to end this, we lose some of you all because the message gets lost in that. You know, it all gets lost in the scenes we saw last night of fires and that kind of thing, and. You know, my hope is that I was so thankful that last night in Memphis downtown that one remained peaceful. But really, the fact that, and I guess, you know, that first night here on Union, there's still a couple of people that were arrested from that. The two counter protesters weren't, but I, you know, again, they're free speech. But imagine that, Jeff. Imagine them being in those shoes, right? And you're wanting to express your outrage, you know, peacefully. And to have on the other side, right? In one world, it's a leader calling you thugs, but in this case, it's two guys saying go out for a jog, in reference clearly to Ahmaud Arbery making light of his murder, making light of your peaceful protest. Imagine how much rage you would feel. You'd want to break something because you that kind of evil. You feel like, man, you know, the idea that you want to incite us, you want to spark us to riot and to come. So what? So we get arrested? Man, that's what we got to try to stamp out. And I need reasonable white folks like you, Jeff, who's you just went through all your and Jeff and all of us, reasonable folks. That's the majority of us to understand. Man, that's a problem, and I got to tell those folks it's a problem. Get those minds changed, and more importantly, just realize that's not acceptable, man. We're not. It's not an acceptable way to live, or an acceptable way to portray yourself. And so, you know, you hope the message isn't lost, but I understand the rage. That said, man, you can't, you know,
Yeah, what were you thinking when you were watching that unfold last night? Because it was...
How many people are going to get shot now? You know, because again, the police get mad, right? And you get so far away from George Floyd and the cause, right, why you're out there, it becomes a fight against the police. You know, and that's, it was fear, Jeff. It was, man, this rage that I understand, don't condone going into stores and getting televisions because George Floyd died. No, but I certainly understand the rage. It goes to fear because I feel the rage, right? But these folks, again, they're, you know, it's having folks tell you, well, it's not going to do anything. Or in some cases, having counter protesters yelling back or a policeman throws a you already feel with rage and you have a tear gas, you know, and look, I understand in some situations that's going to be needed, but the point is there's nowhere for that rage to go. And for, us yesterday taking calls, you know, for you at expressing ourselves is the best way, but man, it's so hard to do it without emotion and without, you know, but we have to, right? We have to, and we need you all to listen to us. Again, it's so layered, but last night you asked me what I was feeling. I'm feeling fear watching that police precinct burn down because I know those cops are mad, right? And maybe one of them pushes a little harder. So then one protester, right, who's really angry, he pushes back and it starts the whole thing, folks. That gets so far away from everything that, you lose the message and we lose our chance to change because then we all get back in our corners and get ready for a fight again. You know, it's us coming out of our corners to the middle that's what's gonna help us move us forward.
I know. So there are a lot of Americans, including the president, who immediately resort to the word thugs. Explain. I'm certain you could sit down with 30% of Memphians, maybe more, 50%, whatever. And they would look at that video and they'd say, what do you mean? How can you not call them thugs? Right? That's what they, look at what they're doing to that building. How are they not thugs? Explain, if you can, why that is offensive.
It's become a trigger word. You know, let's thugs, because we don't feel like it's ever applied to the white folks with guns that are protesting at the state capitol. Was it applied to those guys? No. Now, did they tear anything up? No. But my gosh, is there not some, they've got guns. If black folks had guns, they'd be thugs. It's become that word, that go-to word.
Thugs is what you call African Americans because it's no longer polite to use the N-word. Isn't that true? I mean, it's what people resort to now because they know they're not supposed to say the N-word, and so they go with thugs, which is the updated version.
I'd buy that for some. I think, you know, again, there are those folks that freely use that N-word, dude, they're still freely using it, just not out in public. And, you know, if it's thugs, yeah, but it seems to, Jeff, I guess, you know, I guess in some ways you're right. I guess it has transformed, but, you know, there's still some that'll use the N-word as well, that don't need the new phrasing.
Yeah.
I just think it's become this phrase that folks know, again, when it's applied to, is gonna piss people off. But to your point, it's become accepted in so many ways. And, yeah, you apply it so broadly, but, yeah. I thought, look, those protests last night started peacefully, you know, started with white folks and black folks. Yes, they end up, you know, ugly, looking like a war zone, to to a point where, you know, you're comfortable enough calling them thugs. But every person out there, those folks, I guarantee you, the big percentage of those folks aren't thugs at all.
No,
it allows you to paint that broad brush right over folks and galvanize your base. I think it's disgusting.
It is, in fact, disgusting. And when the president is being labeled as incendiary by Twitter, we have entered some bizarre universe. I think
also diffuse, Jeff. Leaders diffuse.
MLK, you go back to MLK on this, who said, of course, that a riot is the language of the unheard. And so when you have the district attorney saying, you know what, there might be some evidence, this doesn't look like a crime to me, or might not be a crime, so he can't make any arrests here, And when you have the, you know, this is people who are unheard. That's exactly what it is. It's people who are unheard. In separate and unrelated and much more less significant news, Kennedy Chandler is going to, I believe, is he going to be on your show? Or is his coach, who's coming on your show? Do you know?
Kennedy and maybe his father, Kylan, but the family. I'm hoping we just get it straight from Kennedy, yes.
The rumor's certainly out there everywhere that he is going, he's leaving, he's no longer going to be playing high school basketball in Memphis and is going to go play at a prep school. And I'm literally just reading the message boards on this one. I've got no insight. But Kansas is where there's a school in Kansas. But we'll let him make his announcement. If that is what it is, that he is leaving Memphis to go play basketball somewhere else for his final year, what is the significance of that?
Again, in most of these cases, you'd say, well, you'd love to, you know, with James Wiseman, when this was a possibility, your senior year at East, heading out to an IMG, right, or out to Vegas to play for prep school out there, play for Paul Washington's father. You want to keep him in town so Penny Hardaway can sort of have that advantage of not just him recruiting him, but the city recruiting him. With Memphis, it doesn't feel like they're close on Kennedy Chandler. It doesn't particularly feel like they believe that, you know, or they're going after him like a number one priority. You know, J.D. Davison over in Alabama is a guy they've been on for a long time now. But here's the problem with that. Many other schools have come to the table on J.D. And so my point is that it hasn't ever felt close like Memphis was going to get Kennedy Chandler. Now, can that change? Obviously it can. But it's a different situation than Wiseman where you'd say, hey, keep him in town. I hear that the reason for this, you know, Bryce lost a lot of seniors. It'd be sort of a rebuild for him. Why not pull something like, you know, Matthew Morrell, who went down to IMG, obviously, instead of his senior year at Whitehaven, where you can train basketball, still get your school, but train basketball year-round, get ready for your freshman year in college. And so I get it from that standpoint in terms of you feel like you've accomplished everything in Bryce maybe as a senior, right? You don't want to so much be a part of a rebuild as, okay, let's just focus on my career now. But in terms of this one going out to Kansas, because typically we'd say, well, that's a bummer for Memphis because you won't have the city surrounding him saying, hey, go to Memphis. This one hasn't felt that close, though. And I would tell you, I was having this conversation yesterday, that even if Memphis, if the apple of their eyes, J.D. Davison, this point guard out of Alabama, now keep in mind, Kennedy Chandler now ranked the number one point guard. Even if that's the case, I think you still gotta try. Because to this point, like we've said really quickly, you know, we've seen coaches here lose their ability to recruit nationally. What you always want to have, at least to fall back on, is locally. And even if you don't think you're going to get Kennedy Chandler, I would tell that kid, man, I want him every day. Why? Because if he leaves, right, I didn't lose him as much. Well, I mean, I didn't get him, but he made that decision rather than, hey, we just didn't, you know, we didn't even go after a five-star guy, right? That's the number one point guard in the country. Because if you come out of this without J.D. Davison and without Kennedy Chandler, well, look, you know, people love Penny Hardaway, right? And this honeymoon could go on for a while, but it ended with Larry, right, when he wasn't getting Memphis players. And if Penny, who right now still has his national touch to an extent, if he loses that and then the high-level Memphis players are getting out of town, Jeff, this is part of the reason why he's changed gears on Jonathan Lawson, then that's where the love affair can end. They don't care if you're a program legend or not. And that's where you can lose things. So my point would be, even if I thought, you know, even if the apple of my eye was maybe another point guard, I'd play it like I want Kennedy Chandler just in case. Just so, too, because you saw Chris Moore already get out of here. You know, they say that, I know Moose is not a Memphis kid, but you're close on that one, and it appears he's going to get out of town. You don't want to lose what's here. Jonathan Lawson, you've changed gears there. You now offered him, got a good shot, I would imagine, at getting him. You never want to lose Memphis. That always can be that base for you if you need it. And in some cases, you know, it can, you know, take you pretty far.
Don't miss the Jeff Calkins Show, Monday at 9 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.